Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter. Today is April 1, 1981, and this is my audio letter number 63. For 2 days now, news here in the United States has been dominated by the presidential assassination attempt Monday afternoon. The entity Ronald Reagan emerged from the Hilton Hotel, waving and smiling at the press and bystanders. Then, half a dozen or more shots rang out in rapid fire. The president, reportedly hit once, was thrown into his limousine, which sped off. Also hit were a Secret Service agent, a Washington policeman, and White House Press Secretary James Brady with a bullet through the brain. It all happened at 2:25 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, March 30, 1981. By the time people were coming home from work and tuning in to the continuing news coverage, it was already beginning to look cut and dried. A lone assassin, we were quickly assured. An oddball of some kind. Certainly no hint of a conspiracy. But, my friends, it is always the early reports that contain the truth. In the early moments after an episode like this, the unseen censorship of our controlled news media does not function so effectively. It is only after the story is told and retold that the untidy gems of truth are weeded out. In those early moments, there were a number of puzzles which went unexplained and unmentioned later on. The most significant of these was a report on NBC television by NBC reporter Judy Woodruff. She was a close eyewitness and said, quote, "I was probably one car length and a half away from the president's limousine when the shots were fired. People immediately hit the ground, and I noticed there were some shots fired from an overhanging, from a sidewalk that was above where the president's car was," unquote. Then she continued with other comments. My friends, those words of NBC's Judy Woodruff can only mean that there were at least two gunmen. By now, every American must have seen the televised assassination attempt for himself, over and over again. And the arrested suspect was not the one described by Judy Woodruff. He was not the one firing from an overhanging structure or sidewalk above the president's car. Instead, he was on a street level, close to the TV cameras and reporters. Just 8 seconds after she spoke the words I just quoted, Judy Woodruff was cut off in the middle of her report. And since that moment, there has been no more talk about the assassin firing from above the president. That is, not by the reporters. There have been related comments by several different medical spokesmen interviewed on television. They spoke of a downward shot which just grazed the president's chest, but was deflected into his body when it struck a rib. And last night, NBC Nightly News even showed a diagram to this effect. But no one is daring to ask the logical question. How could a bullet fired by the suspect we saw have struck the president from above? You saw it all for yourself, my friends. The president was not bending over when he was hit, but standing straight. The only thing that does explain the bullet from above is what Judy Woodruff reported just once on NBC television. I'm sorry to say that the warnings which I made public in audio letters 60 and 61 are starting to be fulfilled already. The Bolsheviks here apparently failed this time to cut short the new administration. But this is only a reprieve, my friends. They are obsessed with the determination to retake total control of the United States government. Meanwhile, the Bolsheviks here are continuing to flex their muscles in other ways. In particular, they are hard at work to condition our minds to become more belligerent toward Russia, even though we will be committing mass suicide. The next major step in this plan is a 4-part miniseries to begin Sunday, April 5, on ABC television. The series, titled Masada, was filmed in Israel at a cost of $20 million. It's the story of more than 900 Jews who rebelled against ancient Rome and held out for years against impossible odds. Then, faced with the inevitable Roman victory, the Jews of Masada supposedly committed mass suicide rather than be captured. Ancient Masada, my friends, was the model for the Guyana kibbutz of Jim Jones. At Jonestown, just as at Masada, more than 900 men, women, and children were supposed to have committed mass suicide rather than surrender to the imagined enemies of Jim Jones. But it was actually mass murder, not mass suicide. As I explained in Audio Letter 40, Guyana is intended by the Bolsheviks to be the model for the United States. They want us to develop a Masada complex because they want us to commit mass suicide in a war we know we cannot win, all to benefit the Bolsheviks alone. My three special topics for this audio letter are topic number one, first strike planning by America and Russia. Topic number two, the economic road to dictatorship in America. And topic number three, your decision to flee or to fight. Topic number one, as I say these words, a great tragedy is unfolding slowly in Poland. Less than a year ago, a new workers' union called Solidarity started gaining power in Poland. It appeared to hold out the promise of a better life for Poles. Instead, the Solidarity Union has consistently moved Poland to the brink of crisis after crisis. Each crisis has been more dangerous than the one before it. Now, Poland is moving closer to confrontation with Russia, which it cannot possibly win. What Solidarity is doing in Poland is to taunt the Russian bear. The moment one crisis is averted, another is set in motion in a relentless campaign of labor turmoil. By its actions, Solidarity is telling Russia, if you do not intervene militarily, we will take Poland away from you. After Poland, we will break off Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and even East Germany, and then turn them all into enemies on your doorstep. In Audio Letter 59 last October, I gave a warning that this was the true purpose of the Solidarity Union in Poland. Solidarity did not spring up spontaneously from the working masses of Poland itself. Instead, it is financed and controlled by the Bolsheviks here in the United States and abroad. The secret purpose of Solidarity is not to serve Poland's workers, but to use them. Poland is being forged into another Guyana, to be sacrificed on the altar of satanic Bolshevik power. Already, Poland's economy is faltering due to the recurring strikes and turmoil. Food shortages, a favorite Bolshevik weapon, are growing steadily worse, and now the prospect of military intervention is looming ever closer. 25 years ago, Hungary erupted in revolution and Polish workers rioted. Russia wasted no time in putting down those outbursts by force. Yet the United States government did nothing at all except to wring its hands for public consumption. Because in those days, the secret Rockefeller-Soviet alliance was in full swing. The contrast between then and now could hardly be more dramatic, my friends. It is hard to say which nation's behavior has changed more, that of Russia or of America. By comparison to a quarter century ago, Russia has moved towards patience and tolerance. First, in full compliance with the Helsinki Accord, Polish workers were allowed to form their own union, independent of government control. In the old Bolshevik days, that would have been unheard of in itself. Then nearly a year of turmoil and crisis has been allowed to pass without military action by Russia. Instead, there have been government concessions and even a change of government in Poland, all to defuse labor crises. From any objective viewpoint, all this adds up to far more tolerant behavior by Russia than 25 years ago. And yet, what is America's response compared to 1956? The answer is that the United States is now reacting to a lesser provocation with greater belligerence. In recent days, the United States has issued public warnings to Russia, which are so blunt as to make Russia lose face if she does not act. Like the Polish Solidarity Union itself, the United States is goading and taunting the Russian bear. So Russia has moved toward moderation, while America has moved toward belligerence. The public itself is now beginning to see for itself the collapse of the Rockefeller-Soviet alliance, which began coming apart in 1976, 5 years ago. The split began with a still-secret underwater missile crisis in the summer of that year. The four Rockefeller brothers tried desperately to patch things up, but Russia finished severing the alliance in September 1977. Russia began the massive deployment of a whole new generation of manned space weapons, her unique space triad, and in the process, America's secret military control of space was broken. All of this was tied directly to drastic changes taking place within the ruling circles of Russia. I have detailed all of this in the course of many past audio letter reports. Today, it is no longer Russia, but the United States, which is dying from the cancer of Bolshevism. The old Bolsheviks who used to control Russia have been overthrown and expelled from Russia by the hundreds of thousands. And now they are replacing the Rockefeller cartel as the most powerful faction in America. Meanwhile, having overthrown the satanic Bolsheviks, Russia's secret new Christian rulers are struggling to revive the spiritual roots of Russia. Step by step, they are reopening churches, welcoming legal shipments of Bibles into Russia, and allowing religious broadcasts into Russia without jamming, so long as they are non-political. But eradicating the deep scars of 60 years of Bolshevism is a long and complex task. It requires a complete overhaul of the economic and cultural life of a vast nation. The overthrown Bolsheviks have no intention of letting the secret new Kremlin rulers finish the job. Instead, they are obsessed with a frenzy to bring Russia to her knees once again. In order to do that, the Bolsheviks are using their new active power base here in the United States. Step by step, they are maneuvering America toward an all-out war against Russia. In the summer of 1978, I reported that America was secretly shifting to a first-strike nuclear strategy. That is the only way by which the lopsided military superiority of Russia can be offset to some degree. At that time, Russia too was making preparations to be able to mount a first strike if need be. But for about 2 years now, the Russian first strike planning has been on a back burner. Instead, the Russian Kremlin shifted its emphasis to intervention directly within the United States government. Russia's decision to do this followed the assassination of Nelson Rockefeller in late January 1979. The Bolsheviks here were launching an all-out coup d'etat at the highest levels of power in America. They were moving fast with plans for a Middle East war to erupt that same spring. That in turn was to lead to nuclear war one. To prevent that, the Kremlin engaged the Bolsheviks in a no-holds-barred intelligence war, a war of doubles here in Washington. In Audio Letter 46, I revealed Russia's secret weapon in the war of doubles, her robotoids. These entities look and act human, but they are not human. They are simply man-made products of highly advanced genetic engineering. When I made public what I did about the robotoids, I was met by widespread disbelief. Genetic engineering was not in the news then and did not start making headlines until at least a year later. And so many of my listeners simply closed their minds, declared that such a thing was impossible, and turned away. But lately, I'm being asked more and more about this very subject, these genetic replicas of human beings. With all the publicity in recent months about genetic engineering, it is hardly any wonder. What sounded impossible and taboo less than 2 years ago is now being hinted at in the daily news. For example, the New York Times carried a big article just 1 week ago, on March 24, about so-called gene machines, quote unquote. In the light of what I first reported in May 1979, some words from the article are worth quoting, because all this has a direct bearing on an historical turning point which has just taken place. The Times article begins with the words, quote, "Someday there will probably be a library containing all the genetic information needed to create a complete human being." This idea, alarming to some, enticing to others, is no longer entirely a flight of science fantasy. New techniques and automated machines are enormously increasing scientists' ability to spell out the message of heredity in living cells, to put together their own artificial messages in the universal genetic code, and to analyze in complete detail the proteins on which all life depends. New instruments promise to compress into days or hours painstaking research that used to occupy weeks, months, or years, unquote. My friends, there was nothing at all like this in the news 2 years ago. These words were published only last week in the New York Times. But if you will compare those words with what I reported in Audio Letter 46, I believe it will speak for itself. And always keep in mind what you already know yourself. Whatever is made public is always many years behind the latest secret developments. In Audio Letter 51, I revealed that the Bolsheviks also had begun deploying genetic replicas, called synthetics. A new kind of guerrilla war began at that point, unsuspected by the public, pitting Russian robotoids against Bolshevik synthetics. To the many who are asking about the latest in this unseen tug of war, my comments are unchanged from Audio Letter 55. The situation continues to change daily, both here and in Russia. So I can only urge you to keep this in mind as you see events unfold. You will continue to see instances of strange behavior by high public officials, along with flip-flops and U-turns in policy, both domestic and foreign. These are the inevitable byproducts of the continuing secret war of genetic doubles. Another result of this secret war is even more serious. It has to do with a historical turning point, which we have just passed. A few minutes ago, I mentioned that the Kremlin's contingency planning for a nuclear first strike were put on the shelf about 2 years ago. But now, I must report to you that those plans are no longer on the shelf. They are being revived and updated for use in the highest priority. In Audio Letter 55 last June, I reported that the Bolsheviks were making an all-out attack to retake control of the Kremlin. They were using every weapon at their disposal, including synthetics. For a while, the Bolsheviks were on the verge of success. Russia's new ruling group were wounded badly, and many were killed. It all took place without any notice to the public. But without explanation, Russia's expulsion of Bolsheviks slowed to a trickle in mid-1980. And that is how it remained throughout the second half of 1980. As of now, Russia's new rulers appear to have beaten back the Bolshevik onslaught on the Kremlin. 2 months ago, in mid-January, Russia abruptly resumed the wholesale expulsion of Bolsheviks. But the battle still is not over. There is still turmoil in the Kremlin, and earlier this month, the Bolshevik tide out of Russia was cut back once again. Russia's new rulers have just had a very close call. In the meantime, new war preparations have been rushing ahead here in the United States. A whole new grand strategy to bring on nuclear war is now being set in motion. Many details of this vast new plan still remain to be worked out. And also the Bolsheviks are having to work around the limited power now exercised by the crumbling Rockefeller cartel. Even so, the broad outlines of the new war strategy are already clearly defined. The new Bolshevik road to nuclear war one consists of five parallel tracks. They are moving down all five tracks at once, advancing on five fronts. These five tracks are Track 1, keep the Russians off balance by means of internal turmoil. Track 2, get the American people ready for war. Track 3, a limited but crucial American military return to space. Track 4, continued expansion of offensive weaponry for a nuclear war. And Track 5, the creation of unprecedented multiple crises in the world. I have already told you a little about Track 1 of the plan, that is, fomenting internal problems in Russia. As for Track 2, I mentioned a little about the psychological programming of America for war in my introduction. Our preparation for war economically and politically deserves further comment, and I will do just that in my second topic. Track 3 of the Bolshevik war path revolves around the space shuttle program. In Audio Letter 62, I revealed the secret military mission of the shuttle Columbia, scheduled for launch early this month. Its purpose is to place a laser-armed, hardened spy satellite in orbit. If it succeeds, it will be the first time in 3 years that the United States has had a spy satellite on duty for any length of time. Russia has destroyed all the others. I also revealed in my last report that the Space Shuttle Spectacular, scheduled to begin shortly, will actually involve two shuttles, not just one. I can now report that the plan is to carry out 4 military missions like this. This can be done even if a shuttle is lost on every mission, because, my friends, there are 5 space shuttles already in existence. Only 2 of these have ever been seen in public. The Enterprise in 1977 and the Columbia, now at Cape Canaveral. The other 3 are being kept out of sight. Under Track 4 of the war plan, offensive weapons of all kinds are being readied, some secret, some not. At one extreme are the secret weapons. One of these is the secretly deployed American mobile ICBM, the Minuteman TX, which I first made public in Audio Letter 55. Another is the fleet of 52 remaining Titan II missiles, armed with giant cobalt doomsday warheads, as I reported last September. At the opposite extreme are the publicly known strategic weapons. They too are being readied, no matter how obsolete they have become. For example, last month on February 8, the Strategic Air Command carried out its largest air operation since World War II. SAC threw everything it had into the exercise. Hundreds of weary old B-52s groaned into the air, along with assorted FB-111s and tankers. When war comes, the Bolsheviks know that very few will get through to their targets, and none will return. But they will be thrown into the conflict anyway, just for nuisance value. The Bolshevik attitude is, every little bit helps. All these things are important, my friends, but Track 5 of the plan may be the most important of all. That is the part of the plan coined for multiple crises. It is through these crises that the Bolsheviks expect to achieve what they have been denied up to now, a foolproof trigger for a nuclear war one. They plan to confront the Russians with so many potential avenues to war that the Russians cannot cover them all. Because of this plan, the whole world will soon be seething with strife and turmoil. We will no longer see merely one crisis after another. Instead, it will be 2, 3, 4, 5 major crises in the world, all at the same time. Even now, it is beginning to happen. Right now, there are simultaneous crises in El Salvador and in Poland. One threatens Russia's client state, Cuba, while the other threatens Russia itself. And in the months to come, there will be more, involving the Middle East, the Persian Gulf, Red China, and Australia. All 5 tracks in the emerging Bolshevik war path converge about mid-1982. By then, they expect to have America on a war footing, as I will explain further in my second topic. All 4 space shuttle missions are planned to be completed by then. The offensive weapons now in the works will be ready. And by then, the world will be in a cauldron of crises, made to order for setting off nuclear war suddenly and without warning. Just as crises in the Balkans triggered World War I, a world in crisis will trigger nuclear war I. Russian intelligence has already informed the Kremlin about the new grand plan of the Bolsheviks here. Russia's rulers have considered that information in the light of their own deadly struggle to retain control of Russia's government during the past year. And they have come to a decision. The time has come for Russia to resume preparations for their own first strike against the United States. In January 1980, I revealed that the hardliners were once again in control in the Kremlin. They believe nuclear war is inevitable, that the Bolsheviks will keep trying until they bring it about. In their view, the only realistic approach is to prepare to win the inevitable conflict with minimum casualties to Russia. In addition, their planning is aimed at minimizing casualties and irreversible environmental damage to planet Earth. In Audio Letter 38, I described what the Russian rulers call their cosmic perspective. They are looking ahead to the day when planet Earth itself will be the headquarters of the interplanetary Russian Empire. If the Bolsheviks here succeed in striking first, the Earth will be poisoned with deadly radiation and radioactive fallout worldwide. Yet the Bolsheviks themselves will largely escape the fate which they will bring down upon the rest of us, because by picking the moment for war, they will be able to hide safe and sound in the expense of government war bunkers. But Russia's rulers have no intention of letting that happen. They now intend to strike first. They plan to destroy American missiles in their silos and thereby prevent their old-style nuclear warheads from contaminating the Earth. Instead, the Russians intend to fight the entire war with their new-age weapons, which produce no fallout. There will be geophysical warfare, shattered reservoirs and dams, neutron bombs, and particle beam blasts from cosmospheres overhead and from the moon. In short order, the United States, as we know it, will be no more. But our agony will be for us alone. There will be no fallout to plague the rest of the world. Within the United States, rural areas and small towns without military or other federal installations will be spared. If the Russians follow through on this plan, rural areas will be relatively safe in the initial attack. Even so, the fate that now awaits our nation beggars description. We have allowed the satanic Bolsheviks to live among us, to warp our ideals, and to corrupt our nation. We have not resisted their intrigues to get us into war. So now, plans are being made by Russia to exterminate the Bolsheviks here. And when that happens, my friends, tens of millions of us will also die with them.